Welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 82nd episode. Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode. We love doing this podcast for one reason and one reason only. It's because it's for you, the listeners. Without you, we don't have a reason to record. So hopefully things have been going well for you. Over here in the United States, it's the start of our holiday season and end of year stuff. Danny and I have been keeping busy. We are actually working on setting up our home gym in the basement. We're almost there. We're not quite there yet, but we have someone working on finishing that and are very excited to get that well underway because that means we'll be able to create some other cool stuff for you.
We also just had our Thanksgiving and we hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We actually hosted it here, which I think is the first time we've ever hosted Thanksgiving before, which was nice and fun and new. Obviously last year there was basically no Thanksgiving, but this year we ended up having about 10 people here. And of those 10 people, I would say like 7 of them were vegan, and the other 3 are super happy to eat vegan while they're here. So it was a pretty good spread. I was very happy after over a decade of trying every single year to make the perfect vegan custard pie. I finally nailed it, and I am still riding high on that success.
I have no frame of reference because I have never tried custard pie, but it was pretty tasty. Then again, and not to insult you or anything over here, but the truth is, like, I'm hungry right now from prep, so everything tastes good to me, but it seemed like it was a really good custard pie.
Oh yeah, why don't you tell people about that? Why don't you tell people about what you've been up to? Like, you know, your body completely changed in like 8 weeks. I'm like, who is this person I married? What just happened to my husband?
Well, I kind of like to play it cool because if I get too excited, I feel like I messed up. And there's just so much careful planning and execution when it comes to prep. And this is my first time doing it. But yeah, I guess it makes sense to talk about your competition prep on a bodybuilding podcast, right? It started off about 7-8 weeks ago, and so far I've dropped about 20 pounds, which is not the surprising part. That's pretty much exactly what I expected to happen. The difference this time around is how it feels and how I am approaching dieting and food and my lifestyle. Like, usually when it comes to prep, I think I get a little too excited and a little too nervous, and I also start pulling out all the stops right from jump. So day one, it's like, oh, okay, find the most voluminous food and as fast as possible, get caffeinated as quickly as possible because it'll keep you energized. There's all kinds of tricks that we do to keep ourselves satiated, like artificial sweeteners and just blah, blah, blah. And this time around, I braced myself for the worst by getting all of those things ready. And I didn't need a single one of my tools that I use when I'm deep into prep. It felt really good to be overprepared and also realize, like, hey, you don't need to use that stuff until you absolutely need it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we see a lot of people who use these kind of like dieting tools, these dieting foods towards the end of their prep, and then they keep using them in the off season. And I'm like, buddy, what are you doing? Like, you don't need this anymore. Like, let's not kid ourselves. This is not good food. It's just the food that you've been eating towards the end of a diet where like a cardboard box would taste like a gourmet meal. So let's get back to some real foods. But one thing you said that I'm sure is going to make some listeners' ears perk up is you said it's been 7 or 8 weeks and you have dropped 20 pounds. And usually when we talk about weight loss, one of the things you hear is like 1 to 2 pounds a week is ideal. So obviously that would be 14 to 16 pounds, not 20. And we also hear like, you know, if you lose more than that, you're losing muscle. Like, what do you say about that? I'm curious too.
Well, the truth is I haven't given a ton of thought on this particular approach juxtaposed against, say, the opposite kind of structured prep, which is when you do it really, really slowly. I think that's the other extreme. There's cutting very, very slowly, and the theory is you hold on to as much muscle mass as possible. Then there's a theory of, well, drop a bunch of weight because you're going to lose muscle anyway, like I'm doing right now, stable out, and then you'll be able to hold on to muscle and cut slowly. And plus you need like a really good starting point to get really lean. At least that's the theory. And then there are all kinds of approaches in between where I feel like they're more suited towards the earlier years of your competition career where you don't want to get too, too lean. And you're also newer to dieting, so you don't really know how your body's going to respond. You don't really know how you're going to feel. And it's a matter of being realistic about your approach and your goal. So at this stage in the game, being my seventh prep, I've never tried it this way. I've probably been with the middle of the road approaches, even though I've been really good at dieting. And a lot of it has to do with me needing to hold on to muscle. This time around though, I've thought about cutting really slowly and I've thought about fast and quick and then cutting really slowly. I'm favoring it right now for this year's worth of experimenting and next year's, because I feel like in order to get natural bodybuilding, super duper competitive stage lean, you have to have a very advantageous starting point. As crazy as it sounds, you want to be at the lower end of an athletic body fat range or even slightly below that in order to get to like stupid levels of lean.
Interesting. I'm very curious to see how it plays out because this is not how I would structure it, but that doesn't mean that my way is the only way to structure a prep. So I'm very curious to see how it goes. One thing I wanted to point out, like you can lose 1 to 2 pounds a week safely. That's actually kind of like an overgeneralization. A better figure to follow, but it's more of a pain in the butt to calculate, would be 0.5% of your body weight per week up to 1.5% of your body weight per week, which where you started at 190, right?
Closer to 200.
Okay, so you started at 200. That would be anywhere from 1 to 3 pounds per week that mm-hmm. you could safely lose. So I just thought it was something worth mentioning.
I agree. And I am not fully convinced that this is the best approach or even the right approach right now. It's just the approach that I'm currently pursuing. And I'm more than happy to try like a slow cut for a future prep. Just to, you know, because every time you do it, you change the game up a little bit and see which way works better for you. You never really know.
Do you guys ever want to hear me and Giacomo debate these things the way we debate them when there's not a microphone on? You just let us know because I am here for that podcast content. If you guys want to hear me and Giacomo
duke it out,
go back and forth about like, but why are you doing it this way? Here's what I think. Well, here's why I'm doing it this way. And this is what I think. Okay, well, I disagree, but whatever. Let us know, because those are my favorite conversations, but I hesitate to make that type of podcast, because I don't want it to sound like we're arguing when it's more of like just a discussion.
Well, maybe we'll put the disclaimer in the show notes, like heavy sarcasm, arguments, explicit content. Beware our normal podcast voice. You're just not even going to see it.
So what are we talking about today? Giacomo has taken the reins on this podcast and coming up with topics because my brain feels like oatmeal when it comes to creating content these days. It's like I've made all the content that I can make. I've said all the things that I could say. So coming up with topics, it's like little birdies floating around my head. So take it away, Giacomo.
Yeah, I thought I saw something above your head over there. I felt like it would be a good idea to delve into the topic of negative self-talk. I think that it is one of those things where it's obvious when someone is being negative and talking themselves down. And I think that's the kind of stuff where you can get away with it and it's not too big of a deal. It's kind of like, yeah, stop saying you suck today. Stop saying you are a fat piece of crap, or like whatever, or like, you know, you're not strong enough, get stronger. Like bro talk, for example, man up, get under the bar and push more. You can't do this. It's like stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's the stuff I want to talk about today. I feel like I want to talk about those much, much deeper layers of negative self-talk, the kind of things that wreck your ego to the core and cause you to actually veer off course and can actually be career enders, or the kinds of things that land you in a scenario where counseling isn't even enough and working on yourself isn't even enough. And I hate to dramatize, but those kinds of scenarios are entirely possible. And I feel like there's a lot of work that you can do by becoming aware of your inner self and your negativity. And there's feedback loops that you gain when you start to talk about and have these conversations with others, right? And people usually don't know what to say. It's like, okay, well, you're sitting here talking about how uncomfortable you are in your own skin and how you're weak and how food in general makes you unsafe and like all these kinds of things where you can get stuck having conversations with others that reinforce the idea that you yourself are talking negatively about yourself. Does that make sense?
You might have lost me a little bit along the way there, but I think I understand what you're saying, but I would love to hear some examples because I'm not totally sure I understand what you're saying. So what made you want to talk about this today?
Well, it's really hard to put into words and say it out loud, but I can tell you that I know what it feels like to be in a negative space and to not admit it to others when they're calling me out on it and to not admit it to myself. And I know how it feels to do that and still be successful. And I know how it feels to not be in a negative state and to be just as successful and arguably have the opportunity to feel better and be more successful. That much I can tell you. And lately, I have done a lot of thinking and framing things in my like mindset-wise carefully to make sure that I'm not trying to give myself an ego boost. Like that's not the opposite of negative self-talk. And I feel like it's something that we do often. We're like, well, I'm not gonna be negative today, so I'm gonna be toot my own horn. I'm gonna be looking for validation from others. I'm going to be thinking positive. And to me, that's just a scapegoat. Like it's an excuse to not work on yourself and think about, one, understanding where your negativity is coming from, and two, how do you change it? You can only understand where it's coming from until you dig deep. Like for me, for example, I'll never admit it out loud because ego and all that, but when I'm bulking, I am uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable with the idea of bulking for a long period of time. I am arguably an expert in dieting. I'm really, really good at it. And it's like, well, I could just say to myself, there's a reason and a purpose for me to bulk for 3 years straight. There's a reason and a purpose for me to stay outside of an athletic body fat range at like whatever, 20 or 25% body fat. There's a reason for it. Okay, so reason and purpose keep me going. But on the inside, I don't want to say I hate myself, but I'm very uncomfortable as an example. And these are hard things to accept. You know, had I, in hindsight, not been negative when I was bulking, maybe I would have had an easier time buying clothes that felt comfortable and fit me the right way. Maybe I would have had a better schedule around eating properly, getting in the right amount of protein because I felt like I was doing what I should be doing. Maybe I would have trained in a certain way and focused on how I could improve my body instead of I just need to make it to the finish line in bulk for the next 3 years because it's what I should be doing. So looking back, even now where I'm in a place where I absolutely love where I am, I'm competing again, and obviously I enjoy that very much, I can easily look back at the past 2+ years and be like, there were things that I could have done better, and it was because of that inner chatter that I couldn't control, that I was aware of, but I didn't look for support, and I did not work on myself, and sometimes you just have to learn over time. And so these are the things I think about long term.
See, that's so interesting to me because that is not what I think of when I think of negative self-talk at all. I think of exactly what you said at the beginning, the thoughts that run through your minds, like, oh, way to go, idiot. Like, why did you do it this way? Or like, oh, that looks fantastic on you today. Not go change. Like, to me, that is negative self-talk. And it sounds almost like what you're talking about is, like you said, it's deeper than that, but to me that I wouldn't even call that negative self-talk. I would call that like maladaptive beliefs. Like your belief system is off. I feel like negative self-talk, it can be hard to catch it when it's happening, but like when you see it, you know it. When you hear it, you know it. And you're like, whoa, what was that? I wouldn't talk to anybody else like that. Why am I talking to myself like that? But if you were dealing with something that like you couldn't even admit to yourself at the time, like, is that negative self-talk? I don't know.
That's a good question. Maybe it's not negative self-talk as much as it is negativity. And like you said, that maladaptive belief system.
Like somewhere in there's some kind of a belief, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not you, but like a belief that if you are not in an athletic looking body, that you are not necessarily an athlete. So why put all this effort into doing these things athletes do when you feel like you just look like a non-athlete?
Hearing you say that, there is probably some truth there for sure. I think that it's hard to do anything long term, and I like to pick myself apart and learn the mechanisms that are failing when I'm unable to do something long term really well. Like, I want to continue to be learning and growing as an athlete. So these are the kinds of challenges that I experience and reflect on, because if I don't, these patterns are just going to repeat themselves. I would say other stuff when it comes to self-talk, like you said, any of the easy things there, I think there are...
I didn't say easy. It is not easy. I just think that it's clearer. It's more obvious.
Yeah. Well, what do you do about that kind of stuff? How do you catch in the act? How do you change it up?
Well, the first thing is you have to recognize that it's happening. Like, I don't know about everybody else. I assume everybody has an inner monologue, but I was talking to somebody recently and they were like, yeah, no, not everybody thinks like that. And I was like, whoa, what? I have a constant conversation going on in my head all the time, regardless of who I'm with. Generally, when I'm alone, like, there is always talking in my head, and you just kind of get used to it, I guess. But sometimes something will almost like jump out in your mind and you're like, whoa, that was kind of mean. Like, that's how I recognize it. If I'm like, that was mean, I wouldn't say that to you. I wouldn't say it to my mother. I wouldn't say it to my niece. I probably shouldn't say it to me. But knowing that doesn't mean that it just stops right away. You just have to recognize it every time it happens. Every single time it happens, you have to catch it and be like, whoa, nope, we don't do that. And one of the kind of cheesy but effective pieces of advice that I was given many years ago is, if you catch yourself talking to yourself in a nasty way, to literally counter that voice with three positive things that are true about you. So if you catch yourself like, oh, idiot, I can't believe you did that, be like, hey, I'm not an idiot. I'm actually pretty smart. I'm a caring and compassionate person, and I have people around me who love me all the time. Like, that's three positive and true. That's important. I think it's got to be true. That's just me, though. The affirmations where you wake up and look in the mirror like, I am successful. I attract the things that I want in life. Like, that does nothing for me. It irritates me. It makes me mad. But positive things that I can point to that are true, I can back them up. I can fact check them and they will be accurate. But you got to do it every time. You got to do it every single time. And like, holy crap, do you know how hard that is?
Well, yeah. When you say it, I think to myself, how much anxiety do you want to create? Because then maybe you're going to lack the ability to be present in conversation or with yourself or in general. So I feel, to counter what you're saying, if you don't mind, I think having that skill and practicing it is important. And then I feel like you eventually learn that there is some, you've built some trust with yourself for that kind of countering, like what you do, instead of just doing it consciously, that you're just going to be that way going forward, like, to trust yourself. You know what I mean?
I don't understand what you're countering.
Well, if you're consciously reframing how you're thinking about yourself, are you actually conscious, or are you sitting there like deep in thought about how to correct your...
Okay, so I think I hear what you're saying. You're saying, hey, that's a lot. Okay. maybe you don't have to be that on top of it. First of all, it's really hard to be that on top of it. But, you know, if I think about like housebreaking a puppy, or even potty training our niece, which we did, you can't put the kid on the potty sometimes. You can't put the kid on the toilet sometimes when they say they have to pee. You have to do it every single time without fail, or they're gonna have problems like learning how to use the toilet. Same thing with a puppy. You can't take it out sometimes. Like, it's gonna learn oh, I can't trust this person to take me out every time I need to go to the bathroom. So sometimes I'm just going to go on the carpet and it is what it is because I don't know what's coming. Yes, you do need to learn how to trust yourself, and you learn how to trust yourself by being consistent with this kind of work. And it is work, just like any other thing in your life that you want to change would be work to do it. And the idea is that eventually, hopefully, you know, the positive thoughts start to become the more automatic thoughts, and the negative thoughts show up with much less frequency and maybe quieter.
I like the way that that sounds. I feel like you're hitting the nail on the head as far as what that can look like when you put the work in, and then you can trust that the work that you've done is going to pay off.
Well, what does this have to do with fitness or nutrition? Like, I mean, obviously I can see many, many ties, but I want to hear it from you. What made you think this was an appropriate topic for this podcast?
Well, I think we look at fitness as its own thing, and I feel like it's a major flaw in the way that the fitness industry portrays the idea of training programming, meal plans, and all that. It's like, well,
that they separate it so much from mental health, you mean, right?
And you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that anything that you want to do after you get through beginner mode, especially when you start getting into the intermediate phase, meaning, say, you've been doing this for like 3 years or more.
When the novelty wears off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. It starts to become one of those things where I feel like there are at least two directions it could go. And one direction is, well, you have bargaining chips. And this is really important to you, so you're just going to keep doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on this, whatever this means, whatever your athletic goals are. And that road, if you're reading me right, which I hope that you are, is a bad one. Because what you wind up doing is you compromise your quality of life, you compromise who you are as a person, and the consequences eventually follow, right? So that's one road you could take. Another road that you can take, I'll give you a couple scenarios, is, well, it kind of just, you go in and out. You're phased out and you're phased in. You're phased out and you're phased in. Like, you're concerned about being balanced and getting it all done. And so the reality is, well, I guess it's just not in the cards for me to be a high performing athlete. Like, life happens. There are just things I can't do it all. Then there is the what I feel is more sensible approach, where you start to question how you can continue to work on different areas of your life so that you can continue to do this thing. I feel like that's where the work and negative self-talk comes in.
I agree with you. I think that, first of all, physical fitness and mental health, like, they cannot be completely interdependent of each other. If your mental health and the way that you talk to yourself and the things that you believe about yourself, if they are not good, that is going to show up in the way that you train. It's going to show up in the way that you eat and the behaviors that you have around your own health. You almost can't achieve optimal physical fitness or reach like big goals if your mental health is wobbly. It's like trying to build a house on a foundation of like muddy clay or something like that. And this is not to say like, oh, you have to have perfect mental health in order to reach your goals. Like, hell no. Find me the person who has perfect mental health. I have yet to meet them. The cracks, the chinks in your armor of your mental health, they're going to become at some point the weakest link in your fitness game. We talk about form a lot, and you know, squats and deadlifts are something I always say, like, you can always make the form better. You are constantly chasing the weakest link of your squats and your deadlifts. You know, let's say your knees cave in when you squat. All right, we got to work on those abductors. We have to strengthen the glutes. We have to do this to fix that weakest link. And then boom, another weakest link pops up. You fix that one. Now there's another one. Maybe you now have a forward fall and you got to fix that one. And then maybe you keep shrugging, or I don't know. It could be any number of things, but you're kind of always chasing the weak link around. Your mental health is part of that too. When you think shitty things about yourself, don't you think that's going to pop up in your ability to get your butt out the door and go train at some point? Of course it is. If you think that you are undeserving, like if deep down, if you think you are undeserving of optimal health, do you think that you're gonna eat well most of the time? Probably not. If you don't think you deserve health, why would you, what is the motivation to eat well and take care of yourself? They are so interconnected that I don't care if you have the most perfect plan, if you have the perfect meal plan and the perfect training plan made for you by the best coach in the entire world, if something big is off in your mental health, it is going to make your results less good. You cannot have one without the other. And I mean, I would argue this goes the other way too. Like, it's really hard for people to have awesome mental health when their physical health is suffering. So I really think that they're super connected. And just in the clients we work with, I think most of them do really struggle with some negative self-talk. I mean, I can't speak to their deep underlying core beliefs in every single person, but that surfacey self-talk of like, oh, you look like crap. You probably just heard jingle bells because my mom just came home. Things like you look like crap, or ugh, I don't want to be at the gym. I don't want to wear this thing. It doesn't look the way that I thought it was going to look. Why do you even think you should be in this section of the gym? Listen, guys, I can do I have a pretty good impression of a negative self-talk voice. So yeah, I think that it's something that a lot of people need to work on countering those thoughts.
And it's more than just putting yourself in uncomfortable environments and situations, although I think that is an important piece of the puzzle. I feel like some people might argue the opposite and just be like, well, go with things at your own pace, do things comfortably. If you don't feel comfortable in this place, like, don't leave yourself open to harm. For better or for worse, this
is... Want to hear Giacomo and I go at it? We disagree here.
I know you were going to disagree before I even said it, which is ever the more reason for me to say it out loud because it makes for good conversation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that's... I'm all about putting yourself... Not necessarily in
out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. And then you learn about your chinks are exposed instead of being so protective of them that... Like, there's no amount of inner work that you can do that's going to change your reality once you get back in there. Like, you're not going to be any... Just because you're, like, arguably more put together on the inside, if you've avoided the situations and environments that you need to be in, they're going to feel just as hard when you get out there. You're just going to feel slightly less anxious. That's what I think.
Yeah, me and Giacomo disagree here. Giacomo is a big fan of, like, oh, well, if you're really scared of something, go do it anyway.
Kind of.
And, like, I get where he's coming from. Yes, I do think it's important to occasionally push your boundaries of things that you're working on. I think that's super important. But I think if you are just reckless about the way you do it, then you're going to cause more harm than you're going to help yourself. Like, does anybody remember that Bill Murray movie, What About Bob, where he plays that... Okay, I love
Bill
Murray.
We've
watched it twice together now.
You gotta watch it at least five
times.
And you
forgot that we watched it the first time. Anyway, he has all of these mental health problems, and he's like stalking his therapist, basically.
Oh, yeah.
But he walks around, and he goes, baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. I think that all the time if I have to put myself in a situation that is outside my comfort zone. I'm gonna do it in baby steps. I'm not going to... I will not throw myself into the belly of the beast the way that Giacomo does. But I also think that has a lot to do with our very, very, very different upbringings.
The upbringings, huh?
That's a can of worms we're not going to open on this particular podcast. But if you ever want to hear...
You know, Danny, I...
About our very, very, very different upbringings. I think that could be an interesting episode just to give people a better idea of where each of us is coming from with our coaching approaches. Like, we just come from different backgrounds and mentalities and things like that. And it changes the way that we approach our clients and their goals and reaching them.
Yeah, I think it's a strength because each of us challenge each other, and I find myself using Danny's approaches where I can fill in the gaps for my weaknesses, and I don't know about you, hopefully my approaches wear off on you a little bit, and it helps you. But I think that's a good idea also, right? It's comforting to be with like-minded people and similar personalities and all that. It feels safe. But I think that it's important to, again, put yourself in challenging scenarios where it forces you to grow, right? Work with different people, be in different environments, not all the time, not to like the detriment of your mental health, but to give you like a little bit of a different perspective. Hopefully while you are doing these kinds of things, you find ways to feel supported and you ask for that kind of support when you're uncomfortable, rather than just being like, well, throwing myself out to the wolves right now, what happens, happens. Like, no, I get it. But even with this kind of way of being, it's still, like Danny said, it comes with some consequences for sure. So there's no like one perfect way to be, I suppose. As a little aside over here, I hear you talk a lot on these conversations, Danny, about the things that if the listeners want to hear this or if the listeners want to hear that.
Yeah.
But I want us to put our money where our mouth is and do these episodes. I feel like we could create a list of them. And I want to be like, you know what?
Well, we have created a list of them. But then I'm like, I don't know if anybody's interested in that particular topic.
That's the juicy stuff. That's the stuff where we actually have to just go for it, you know? We'll keep it a little more interesting, a little more lively. I'll tell you what.
We could always hear from you guys. Yeah. We would love to hear from you guys.
There's creepers out there everywhere. You know, I don't know
who's... Creepers?
Well, you use
lurkers,
or whatever those things. Talk to us. We want to hear from you. I get emails often, and it surprises the hell out of me. People are like, "I'm listening to all of your episodes," or "I just found you, and I've listened to like half of them," or "I've been an avid listener," and that's why they want to reach out to us.
Yeah.
But I don't hear commentary or feedback on these conversations that we have in these episodes, or what you want to hear about, yeah. Like. Talk to us. We're obviously doing something wrong.
It's so different than other forms of content that you make. You make a Facebook post, you get comments. You make an Instagram post, you get comments. You make a YouTube video, you get comments. You make a podcast, nothing. And I can see that our podcast has been downloaded well over a million times.
By who?
Who are you guys? We want to know.
Talk to me. So like email veganproteins@gmail.com and just like say literally whatever you feel like. Like let us know what's up. What have you gotten out of these episodes? It'll help us get the creative juices flowing so that we don't feel like we're having the same conversation with you. We want to talk about something new and something exciting and something you want to hear about.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny when you work in the fitness industry. For as long as we've worked in the fitness industry, it's like I said at the beginning, I feel like I've said everything. And to just say it again would just be boring and repetitive to people. But, you know, when I get new clients, that's literally what I'm doing. I'm repeating things that, you know, I know, but they don't know yet. I want to know what you guys don't know yet. What do you want to learn more about? Do you want to learn more about very specific stuff about how to eat, how we eat, how our clients eat, how we train, more about body image stuff. We can always talk about that sort. I could talk about that sort of stuff forever. What sort of things do you guys want to know about? Do you want us to have guests on the podcast? We've been toying with the idea of having guests on the podcast. And also we do have the Muscles by Brussels Facebook group, which that has a few thousand people in it. And that's a pretty active group. So if you guys want to chat there, you can chat there. You can email us, veganproteins@gmail.com. You could leave us a review. Those are always helpful. We read those and take the feedback that's in them. And it also helps more people to find the podcast when you do that. So
this is the perfect time to introduce a new member of our team to you, the listeners. And hopefully she'll be on the podcast as well.
I'm sure,
soon.
Yeah.
That will be exciting. And a breath of fresh air. Caitlin Adler, our new assistant coach. And she's been working with us for, I want to say, at least a month.
A couple months, yeah. And she's in Australia, which is super cool to have our assistant coach be in Australia. So when she comes on, you'll get to hear her lovely, lovely accent.
My main thought here is that she's got a lot of different ideas and a totally different perspective than you and I, but we're all kind of similar with what we're looking to get accomplished here.
Question and answer segment here. We have a question from Andrea. What do you eat for breakfast to fill yourself up? I seem to be very hungry in the mornings.
Good question, Andrea. Before I answer it directly, I want to give you my thoughts on how to strategize to feel satiated in the morning. I find that for most people, the earlier you eat in the day, it sort of like opens the portal and the door, and then before you know it, not only are you not satiated in the morning, you tend to be more hungry throughout the rest of the day. So this is a matter of hold out a little bit on breakfast. If you would normally eat at 8 o'clock and you want to feel more satiated, eat at 10. For example, if you normally eat at 6, eat at 8. I think if you do that, you're much more likely to feel satiated. My number one go-to as far as food goes, oats. Oats are so filling. They're so convenient. You can prepare them overnight. They're portable. You can travel with them if like you have a busy, hectic schedule in the morning, or you could take your time and cook them up with something. I usually like mixing berries into my oats. I find that you can just get a nice big serving of oatmeal when you mix it up with, say, some strawberries or some blueberries, and maybe season it up with a little bit of cinnamon and vanilla. I think it's also important, if you're not already getting in protein, I hope you are, if you're listening to Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio, I hope that protein is a priority. But just in case you're not, make sure that morning meal has a hit of protein. Breakfast bacon, like Yves Canadian bacon, is our personal favorite. I would say a protein shake, because that's usually what I do, but that's not too filling. Doesn't give you a full belly feeling, although protein in and of itself will help you be more satiated in the morning. But there's other kinds of cool stuff out there too, like breakfast sausages that you can get your hands on, or you can make your own breakfast meat. A tofu scramble goes really good in the morning too, actually. Tofu scrambles are also very satiating. So those are my thoughts as far as food goes and as far as your approach goes. Next question is from Laura on Facebook. Is creatine worth taking?
Yes, absolutely. I think creatine is worth taking. A lot of people think that a lot of people thought it was a steroid. And there are still some people who don't know a lot about fitness who joke that creatine is a steroid, or they really think it's a steroid, but it's not. Creatine is something that we produce naturally and also consume in animal-based diets. Creatine is what we use in the ATP-PC cycle, which is our first energy system that we use for things that take 30 seconds or less. So a sprint, most sets of weightlifting are utilizing your ATP-PC cycle. So when you have more creatine in your cells, you are able to use that energy system for a bit longer before it has to go to the next energy system. Basically, in a very short way of saying it, taking creatine on a regular basis fills up your creatine stores and allows you to do a little bit more work. And it's not a ton more work that it allows you to do, maybe one or two reps more. When you multiply that by 4 workouts a week, 4 weeks in a month, 12 months in a year, if you were to add that all up, that is a lot more work that you are able to do in a given amount of time. It equals more results. So a lot of people say, oh, well, vegans don't get any creatine, which is true. Vegans don't get creatine in their diet. Meat eaters do get creatine in their diet, but it's still such a small amount that they also take creatine. So, you know, it's not vegans flooding the creatine monohydrate market, if you know what I mean. It's mostly non-vegans taking it. So that argument for eating meat is a little bit bunk, I would say. But there are other benefits to taking creatine monohydrate as well. They have found it to be quite protective of brains in older populations. Like, it protects your brain health, your memory, and your cognitive function as we age. You don't have to take a lot of it. About 5 grams a day is going to be enough for most people. That's about a teaspoon or so. It doesn't matter what time of day you take it. I would just recommend taking creatine monohydrate, which is super cheap. You can buy like 6 months worth at a store for like $15 or something. And creatine monohydrate is always vegan. So you don't have to get any fancy crealkalins or anything like that that people say absorbs better, because creatine monohydrate's absorption rate is 100%. Nothing will be more than 100%. Creatine monohydrate, cheap, effective, proven. Yes, definitely take it. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. We really appreciate you tuning in. If you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like us to talk about, you can shoot us an email, veganproteins@gmail.com, You can join our Muscles by Brussels Facebook group. That's a really fun place for our listeners. You can also find us on YouTube and Instagram, Vegan Proteins, and at Muscles by Brussels. Once again, thank you so much for listening. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon. Running out of time and you're